It's a Monday, it's a brand new week, and we have so much to talk about, from President Obama's climate change agreement to Donald Trump attacking Ted Cruz, plus a very special holiday edition of Things I Hate. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Tend to demonize people who don't care about your feelings.
Alrighty, so here we are. It is indeed a Monday, and it was a busy weekend for a lot of folks. President Obama had himself a busy weekend. Over the weekend, he signs an agreement that is best described as a America gives everybody lots of free crap and nobody else does anything agreement, which is President Obama's favorite type of agreement. He declared over the weekend that this was just the step necessary in order to save the planet. He's like an incompetent bureaucratic Superman. He saves everyone from things that don't exist by giving away money that doesn't belong to him. It's pretty spectacular. Here's President Obama over the weekend explaining that what he just did, the agreement that he just signed to save the world, will indeed save the world, but only if you give him lots of money to give to other people.
The targets we've set are bold, and by empowering businesses, scientists, engineers, workers, and the private sector, investors, to work together, this agreement represents the best chance we've had to save the one planet that we've got.
He's going to save the planet, folks. You got it? So ISIS, eh. Putin, eh. Global war, thousands of people killed, eh. You know, destroying the global economy, going back to a standard of living where only a billion people were on the planet as opposed to 6 billion people on the planet. Eh, but we've saved the world. And look at the glee in his eye. He's so excited about all of this. So what exactly is in this particular agreement? Well, it turns out that what's in this agreement is that industrialized countries are supposed to transfer $100 billion every single year to less developed countries. This money is supposed to rise. NPR says the financial aid will keep ramping up over time. And it's supposed to be climate finance. So we're supposed to send money to poor countries that are supposed to be impacted by climate change, which I always thought was global, right? I thought the idea was that climate change affected everyone more or less equally, but apparently it only hurts poor people. This is the world has now become the fake New York Times headline. You remember the old fake New York Times headline joke, right? The end of world coming, blacks and poor people hurt most. Well, this is basically how President Obama thinks of global warming, right? Global warming coming. Blacks and poor people hurt most. Therefore, everybody in the industrialized world has to sign checks to everybody in the non-industrialized world. This, of course, has worked out beautifully in terms of foreign aid, because it's not like we've signed tremendous amounts of money over to foreign dictators who have then taken that money and used it to build palaces and buy guns for themselves and murder people. They never do that. They always use the money exactly for the things we want them to use it for. What else is in here? Well, apparently, Secretary of State John Kerry was asked by Chuck Todd over the weekend about the lack of enforcement mechanisms. There's no enforcement mechanisms for anything in the agreement. Todd said there's a lot of pledges, a lot of promises. There's no mechanisms for getting countries to comply other than wagging your finger at them and shaming them. And Kerry actually said that's the most powerful weapon in many ways. That's actually what he said. He said so the only tool to stop him is finger wagging. And Kerry goes, yeah, that's the most powerful tool there is, which may be why we're losing to ISIS, gang. That just may be why we're losing to ISIS. The deal itself, the agreement, explicitly includes a provision that means that Obama can avoid Congress, because there's nothing in the agreement that says that Congress has to do anything to meet these goals. It's sort of like a pledge that we're going to try and meet the goals. So none of this has to come to fruition, but Obama presumably can misdirect resources from one thing to this particular agreement. It's a terrible deal all the way around, but this is who President Obama is, and it is incredible. By the way, the father of climate change activism, this guy who's been deemed the father of climate change awareness, he is now calling this deal BS, and he's saying it's BS. His name is James Hansen. He's a former NASA scientist, and he testified to Congress in 1988 about greenhouse effect and global warming. He says this is absolute crap. He says this is nonsense because there is nothing here that actually forces any of these industrializing countries to cut down their carbon emissions, which is true. So China and India and Russia will continue to emit. We won't, and we will also sign them large checks so that they can continue to emit, which is just going to be awesome. Meanwhile, over here in the real world, President Obama continues to be more scared of climate change than he is of terrorism. There's an amazing story. This is truly an amazing story. You want to know what undergirds the rise of Trump in recent polls. I've discussed at length why there's so much Republican enthusiasm for Donald Trump. Recent poll today, Monmouth University poll comes out. Trump 41% nationally. 41% nationally. His next closest competitor, Ted Cruz, at 14%. 14%. So Trump has now broken through what people thought was sort of his glass ceiling, like 30, 35%. He's now up to 41% nationally in the primaries. He's still losing to Cruz in Iowa, which is making him a little bit crazy, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But he is actually blowing people away in the national electorate. And the reason for that is if you look at the Monmouth University poll, what it shows is that question number six in the poll is, what's your top priority in this election? And 39% plurality say it's terrorism and security. Terrorism and security. There's another poll over the weekend showed that a plurality of Americans support a temporary ban on Muslim immigration and visas to the country until the government can get it worked out. That's Trump's proposal that we discussed last week. I explained why I think that that proposal is wrongheaded. But the reason people are getting behind Trump is not because they're bigots, as I said last week. The reason they're getting behind Trump is because they don't trust the government to keep us safe. Well, turns out we shouldn't trust the government to keep us safe. And I have before me, in front of me, on this very computer, the reason why you should not trust the government to keep you safe. Okay, you ready for this? This is from the Daily Wire today. Okay, here's what we know. We know that Tashfeen Malik, who is the delightful female who came over from Saudi Arabia along with her husband, Sayed Farouk, and then shot 14 people in San Bernardino, we know she was screened by DHS, that's the Department of Homeland Security Terror Squad, that she passed a criminal and national security background check using an FBI database. And now we know something else. You ready for this? Because this is truly a mind-blowing story, and I'm amazed it hasn't been more heavily covered. It's a mind-blowing story. You ready for this? Okay, here we go. The Obama administration actively prohibited its own DHS agents from screening social media messages of foreign citizens applying for visas to enter the country. According to John Cohen, who's a former acting undersecretary at DHS for intelligence and analysis, quote, during that time period, immigration officials were not allowed to use or review social media as part of the screening process. Are you getting all this? Tashfeen Malik was online. We know this. She was posting messages about how much she loved ISIS, and people in our government were forbidden by the Obama administration from checking what she was posting on Facebook. Why? According to John Cohen, quote, immigration, security, law enforcement officials recognized at the time that it was important to more extensively review public social media postings because they offered potential insights into whether somebody was an extremist or potentially connected to a terrorist organization or a supporter of the movement. The primary concern, this is the key, okay, the primary concern was that it would be viewed negatively if it was disclosed publicly, and there were concerns it would be embarrassing. He said it was primarily a question of optics. Direct quote, it was primarily a question of optics. There were concerns from a privacy and civil liberties perspective that while this was not illegal, it would be viewed negatively if it was disclosed publicly. You getting all this? Okay, for pure PR, President Obama shut down a program that would have looked at the Facebook messages of people entering the country, including a terrorist who shot 14 people. So 14 Americans were shot to death because of President Obama's optics. What an absolute jackass our president is. And the president of the United States allowing Americans to die for optics. That's an incredible thing. But he's done this before. What do you think Benghazi was? Benghazi was Hillary Clinton allowing Americans to die for optics. She didn't want people to notice that Benghazi had turned into a hellhole because she'd created it. And so she didn't give security. And so Americans had to die for that. Americans have to die in the Middle East, in Israel. They have to be killed in Israel for optics because we can't acknowledge that Israel is in the same war as the United States. Americans have to be killed in Paris because optics. We can't recognize that ISIS is a global threat. Optics, optics. That's all this Obama administration is. It's optics. And you want to know why Trump is rising? Okay, I said last week that Trump is the right-wing version of Obama in the sense that he is a reality TV star elevated to political levels, but he's in direct response to the incompetence of Obama. The more that you think the government is incompetent, the more you don't want the government doing anything, which to my way of thinking is actually probably right. Why would you trust the government to be able to screen anyone if they're not even looking at the Facebook messages of people coming into the country? Recognize something here, folks. Okay, we just had a big, big controversy with Edward Snowden this year because Edward Snowden revealed that the government was looking at our metadata, my metadata, your metadata, everybody's metadata, right? That's all the kind of generic information they can glean off of your Facebook posts and your phone calls without looking into the content. But they had the capacity to look into the content of American citizens, and it was a big controversy at the time, right? That was for American citizens. Foreign citizens trying to get into the country Obama says, no, we can't look at their stuff. No, those people, we have to leave alone. So your metadata we'll look at. We won't look at the Facebook, the public Facebook. Remember, not private messages, public Facebook posts. Those we cannot look at. We will bar our people from looking at things they put in chat rooms. Hey, how asinine is this? How ridiculous? How many Americans have to die for this crap? I mean, honestly, how many Americans have to die so that Democrats feel good about themselves and multicultural about themselves? In Europe, they're starting to feel the brunt of this, by the way. Angela Merkel, who is the chancellor of Germany, she was the Time Magazine Person of the Year. We talked about this a little bit last week. She was the Time Magazine Person of the Year because she announced that she was going to allow 1 million Syrian Muslim refugees into the country. Right? Today, she came out and she said, by the way, we're going to have to like go back on that a little bit because turns out this isn't going all that well. But she had to say it originally because she had to feel good about herself. The Europeans had to feel good about themselves. I was having this conversation over the weekend with the managing editor over at Daily Wire, Jeremy Boring, and Jeremy and I were talking about Fourth Amendment rights and security. And he was saying that he's really uncomfortable with what the French government is doing in France, where they're knocking down doors of mosques. And I said, well, it sort of depends on what's going on in the mosque. I believe in reasonable search and seizure. I don't believe in unreasonable search and seizure. The problem is this. When you have a multicultural society where you suggest that all cultures are equal and equally dangerous, when you do that, and then when you say at the same time, we're going to keep you safe, then what ends up happening is in order to keep you safe, we have to look at some cultures and suggest, hey, maybe these mosques that are funded by Wahhabists all over the world and are linked to terrorism, maybe they're violating basic principles of Americanism. Maybe we ought to take a look at them and their connection to terror. But because it's multicultural, because we're all multicultural, we now have to make sure we're not singling out that group of people. And to make sure we're not singling out that group of people, now we have to violate everybody's rights. So basically, the way that security used to work is you looked at the description of the suspect, and then you targeted the suspect. Now the way security works is you look at the description of the suspect. If the suspect happens to be of minority persuasion, then you have to target everyone or no one. Right? Everyone has to be targeted or no one can be targeted. And this is how civil liberties get violated across an entire nation because, after all, we can't discriminate against this particular group or this particular subgroup or this particular set of potential terrorists. No, we have to discriminate against everybody equally, which, of course, is idiocy. Because the fact is, not everyone is equally likely to be a terrorist. But here's what's amazing about this. So at the same time this report is coming out, the Obama administration is going around, the entire left is going around saying the real threat to the world right now, the real threat to the world is Donald Trump. As I've mentioned, I'm not a Donald Trump fan. I'll explain more on that in a little while because Donald Trump said a couple of things over the weekend that are just absurd. But the entire left has decided that the real threat to global peace is not radical Islam. No, 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 no. It's Donald Trump. So John Kerry, legitimately a moron. I mean, John Kerry, who every day looks like he is, I'm not sure what looks waxier, him or the wax mannequin of him at the Waxworks Museum. Here's John Kerry speaking about how Donald Trump's Muslim ban is the real threat to world peace.
Well, those people who know the United States well are quite shocked because they see it as totally contrary to American values, as discriminatory, and frankly, as potentially dangerous in that it seems like a person running for president of the United States who's doing well in the polls is prepared to take actions that would in fact ratify the notion that people are at war against Islam, not against Daesh. And so I think that you've got to be very careful just by categorizing people by being Muslim. That is discrimination, and it is contrary, I think, to the fundamental values of our country. We have plenty of ways to vet people. We already do it. We have a huge process of examining people for visas. We know who's coming into our country for the most part.
We know who's coming into our country for the most part. We have a huge process of vetting all of our visas. Okay, except that the day after he says this, there's now a massive report that comes out from a member of the Obama administration saying we're not vetting anybody. Right, we're now finding out that we're not vetting anybody, that in fact, the people who are vetting, we're not even looking at their Facebook posts. And if we had been looking at their Facebook posts, or if we had looked at the address of the lady who was coming in, or if we had been monitoring their activity after they came into the country, or if we hadn't intimidated neighbors into shutting up because they were afraid of being accused of racial profiling, then there wouldn't be 14 dead people in San Bernardino. They'd be going about their business today. And then he says it's discrimination to disagree with him, basically. This is the absurdity here. It really is absurd. And so now what we're getting is we're getting people trotting out the We're trotting out prominent American Muslims to explain that Donald Trump is really ISIS. ISIS is Donald Trump. By the way, there is nothing more demeaning to what ISIS actually is than comparing them to Donald Trump. I mean, really, seriously. Like, if you're comparing a guy saying stuff to people who are literally murdering the disabled, and there's a report today that ISIS is going around murdering people with Down syndrome. If you're really going to compare Donald Trump to those people, first of all, the only people I know in America who murder the mentally disabled are Planned Parenthood. They're really into it. I mean, if you're unborn and we know that you're Down syndrome, then they're totally into killing you. But those are the only people in the United States I know of, any organized group who's in favor of murdering the mentally disabled or people who have mental issues. But they're now trotting out, the media are trotting out prominent Muslims to explain that Trump really is ISIS. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's most famous for lagging it on defense, dogging it on defense when he's playing for the LA Lakers. Terrific scorer, great skyhook, not a great defensive player. Now he's a prominent Muslim spokesperson, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he says Donald Trump is doing ISIS's work.
Although Mr. Trump isn't committing the violence, when the violence happens, he exploits it. Okay, so instead of offering practical and realistic solutions, he's exploiting people's fear, and he's doing ISIS's work for them. And that is something that we can't let him keep doing that. We have to say something about it, at least.
Now, you see, Donald Trump is doing ISIS's work for them. Now, what's weird about this is I wasn't aware that it was ISIS's agenda to prevent Muslims from entering the United States. I wasn't aware that was their agenda. In fact, I thought probably that was the reverse of their agenda. If they want to take over the United States, it's kind of hard to do that if there are no Muslims here. I didn't realize that ISIS's main agenda was preventing the entry of Muslims into Western countries. It seems like it's been a pretty successful tactic for ISIS and al-Qaeda to have more Muslims in Western countries because you can create breeding grounds for terrorism. There's a report over the weekend. More British Muslims joined ISIS last year than joined the British military. Okay, the idea that Muslims in the West are immediately brought into secular culture is just not true, statistically speaking. But I love that there's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar explaining that Donald Trump is doing ISIS's work. Let's just flash back a couple of years. Here is Donald Trump talking. I mean, here's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talking about how he thinks law should happen. This isn't even a couple of years ago. It's like several weeks ago. Here's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talking about how it should work in Muslim states.
Well, Sharia law is for Muslims. So if there's a Muslim majority state, then it has to be run by Sharia law. But I live in a very diverse country, and I have to respect everyone else's beliefs.
Okay, so who's doing ISIS's work here? ISIS is literally called the Islamic State. Hey, it's literally called the Islamic State. And for folks who don't know ISIS's history, the reason Islamic State is different than al-Qaeda is because ISIS wanted to craft its own Islamic utopia. That's what it did differently. Al-Qaeda didn't create its own state. It was just an international terrorist group that had backing from states like the Taliban-run Afghanistan. And ISIS actually wants to create its own state, its own Sharia law state. There's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar saying not only that Islamic countries, many of them have Sharia law, but that if it's a majority Muslim country, it must have Sharia law. Who's doing ISIS's work? Is it Donald Trump saying less Muslims in the United States we haven't vetted? Or is it Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, LA Laker great, saying that Muslim majority countries must be ruled by Sharia law? By the way, Sharia law means that it's a theocracy, folks. I know the left wants to soft pedal what Sharia law is. Okay, there are two types of Sharia law. There's Sharia law in the United States, which means that there are people who engage in, for example, contractual negotiations, Islamic contracts, and they want it to be bound by their own contract, and so those are enforced in American courts the same way that there are Jewish contracts that are enforced in American courts. Nothing weird or strange about that. Then there's Islamic law, as in like the government is run by Islamic law. If the government is run by Islamic law, we're talking about taking the hands off of people for thievery. We're talking about stonings for adultery. We're talking about killings and mutilations for homosexuality. We're talking about women not being able to vote. We're talking about a lot of things that are not so nice, okay? Sharia law countries don't tend to work particularly well with Western values. Who's doing ISIS's work? Donald Trump or the left and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar here? This is why, and it's all part of the same routine. And Barack Obama, he said the same thing over the weekend. He says that he tries to equate bigotry against Muslims with what ISIS is doing. Right? He's trying to equate Trump and ISIS again. This is the whole argument, right? Trump and ISIS, they're two sides of the same coin. To make this argument, you have to be so morally blind. Okay, whatever you think about Donald Trump, and I think that he's a bloviating blowhard, whatever you think about Donald Trump, that doesn't change that he is not ISIS. And any comparison of a guy who says stuff about limiting immigration of a group you can't vet, to people who legitimately carve the heads off of babies, which is what ISIS has been doing, it's really pretty disgusting. Here's Barack Obama making that case, however.
Terrorists like ISIL are trying to divide us along lines of religion and background. That's how they stoke fear. That's how they recruit. And just as Muslims around the world have to keep rejecting any twisted interpretation of Islam, all of us have to reject bigotry in all of its forms. I'll say it again. Prejudice and discrimination helps ISIL, and it undermines our national security.
Prejudice and discrimination, that's what's helping ISIL. Not having more Muslims in the United States who haven't been vetted, that doesn't help ISIL. What helps ISIL is discrimination. What helps ISIL is people not liking Muslims. Right, if we were just nicer, then things would go better. Because it's not like the United States has been welcoming to Syed Farouk and his family. It's not like France was welcoming to the families of the people who murdered 130 people in France. It's not like Europe is being welcoming. It's not like Sweden has been welcoming to Muslims, and they've taken over the entire city of Malmö to the extent that Jews are now fleeing. Like, there are no Jews in Malmö, which was a Jewish center, because they're afraid of hate crimes against them by Muslims. And this whole thing is idiotic. It's truly idiotic. Nobody is suggesting that Muslims should be treated badly. But if you're trying to equate, rational fear of Islamic infiltration, Islamist infiltration into the West with ISIS killing people, Westerners, you're out of your mind. It's just crazy talk altogether. Now, on to Trump and Ted Cruz. Over the weekend, news broke that Ted Cruz had secretly attacked Donald Trump. There was some leaked audio of Ted Cruz attacking Donald Trump. This is from a fundraiser, and it's pretty mild stuff, but it led to what is now being blown up into a major battle between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Here is Ted Cruz, the tape that started it all. Ted Cruz at a fundraiser talking about Donald Trump.
The final two candidates I'll discuss are Trump and Ben Carson. Both of them, I like and respect both Donald and Ben. I do not believe either one of them is going to be our nominee. I don't believe either one of them is going to be our president. I think both of them, their campaigns have a natural arc. And with both of them, I think gravity is pulling them down. We've seen that. Carson is further in that descent. But I think in both instances in particular, you look at Paris, you look at San Bernardino, it's given a seriousness to this race that people are looking for who is prepared to be a commander-in-chief, who understands the threats we face, who am I comfortable having their finger on the button. Now, that's a question of strength, but it's also a question of judgment. And I think that is a question that is a challenging question for both of them. So my approach, much to the frustration of the media, has been to bear hug both of them and smother them with love.
Okay, so this is basically the point that Ted Cruz is making here. And it's not a wrong point, which is that as people get more serious, they're moving away from Carson. They're not moving away from Trump, by the way, because Trump has staked out the hardest core position. And when you stake out the hardest core position, you tend to attract people. Strong language attracts people. Weak language makes you feel weak. Strong language makes you feel strong. This is true in every social science study ever done. If you use strong language and you're wrong, you're more likely to attract supporters than if you use weak language and you're right. Well, that relatively mild attack on Trump, and Trump decided to go after Cruz. And I will say Trump has had success going after Ben Carson, some other members of the Republican race. He has no success going after Cruz because his strongest line of attack is basically what the establishment says about Cruz. Here's what Donald Trump had to say about Cruz. He said that Cruz is unqualified. Wait till you see this tape. It's like, does Donald Trump own a mirror gang? Wait till you hear this one.
What do you think of Ted Cruz?
Well, do you notice he said it behind my back? Somebody taped that conversation. He said it behind my back. And that's okay. Look, I don't think he's qualified to be president.
Why not?
Because I don't think he has the right temperament. I don't think he's got the right judgment.
What's wrong with this temperament?
Well, you look at the way he's dealt with the Senate, where he goes in there like a, you know, frankly, like a little bit of a maniac. You're never going to get things done that way. Look, I built a phenomenal business. I'm worth many, many billions of dollars. I have some of the greatest assets anywhere in the world. You can't walk into the Senate and scream and call people liars and not be able to cajole and get along with people. He'll never get anything done, and that's the problem with Ted.
he'll never get anything done, and that's the problem with Ted from Donald Trump, who, by the way, and we did not colorize that video. I mean, Donald Trump, for those who can't see, looks like he is gradually turning into an Oompa Loompa. I mean, he is wildly orange in that particular clip. By the way, it is worth noting, because we're talking about his general appearance, that he did release a letter today from his doctor about his health. And this is so Trump. It's so Trump. He says, to whom it may concern. I guess his doctor's name is Harold Bernstein. So to whom it may concern. I have been the personal physician of Mr. Donald Trump since 1980. His previous physician was my father, Dr. Jacob Bornstein. Over the past 39 years, I am pleased to report Mr. Trump has had no significant medical problems. Mr. Trump has had a recent complete medical examination that showed only positive results. Actually, his blood pressure and laboratory test results were astonishingly excellent. Over the past 12 months, he has lost at least 15 pounds. His physical strength and stamina are extraordinary. And then he says, if elected, Mr. Trump, I can state unequivocally, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. So it's not just that Trump is healthy. He's the healthiest person who ever lived. You got to love the Trump campaign. That attack on Cruz is going nowhere, by the way, because Donald Trump calling Ted Cruz wild is like O.J. Simpson saying to somebody that they mistreat their wife. Like, that is not going to carry a whole hell of a lot of water. It's also not going to carry a lot of water because Trump versus Cruz is not just an exercise in temperament. It's also an exercise in conservatism. One of the other things Trump said over the weekend, and this was actually more astonishing to me than his attack on Cruz, was Trump hitting Antonin Scalia. We didn't really have a chance to discuss this last week, but Scalia was specifically asked, he's in the middle of a Supreme Court hearing, and it's about affirmative action. And so Scalia said in the middle of that hearing, by the way, it's true that affirmative action doesn't really, there are some people who say affirmative action doesn't help black kids because they'd be better off going to schools they're qualified for where they can do really well, as opposed to schools that are too hard for them where they don't do as well. There are statistics that bear this out. People drop out at higher rates. They don't do as well in passing the bar in terms of getting into law school through affirmative action, for example. Well, Donald, and everyone on the left said Scalia's a racist for even mentioning this. Well, Donald Trump is asked about it, and here is Donald Trump hitting Antonin Scalia over absolutely nothing.
Justice Scalia raised the issue of whether it might be better for some African-American students to go to a, quote, slower track school where they do well, unquote, as opposed to a more elite college. Now, you have said that you're fine with affirmative action, though it is coming to a time when maybe we don't need it. What did you think of Scalia's remarks, and where are you today on affirmative action?
Well, I thought his remarks were very tough. I mean, I don't want to comment on him. He's a respected Supreme Court judge, but I thought his remarks actually were very, very tough.
Tough in a bad way or in a good way?
Well, I think they were very, very tough to a certain community.
To the African-American community.
I thought it was very tough to the African-American community, actually.
This sounds like you're not supporting what he said.
Like, I don't like what he said, no. I don't like what he said. I heard him. I was like, let me read it again. Because I actually saw it in print, and I'm going, I read a lot of stuff. And I'm going, whoa.
So you still support affirmative action?
Look, I have great African-American friendships. I have just amazing relationships. And so many positive things have happened. One thing I will say, and I will say this, and I say it to everybody, Barack Obama has done very little for the African-American community.
Okay, we can stop it there. The intellectual constipation on the part of Donald Trump there is truly amazing. He's like pushing out a terrible intellectual bowel movement in the middle of that. I mean, first of all, what Scalia said is absolutely true. But, you know, this is Trump. I mean, Trump is reacting to it on the spot. And then I love the little riff. Oh, I read a lot of stuff, and there I am. I'm reading things. And then the things that I read, they go in my brain. And then I think about them. And then eventually I say something when you ask me a question about them. But they're tough. Tough bad? No, tough good. No, like tough, I don't know, like a tough guy. Like a tough guy movie. Like a steak. Like a good steak. But it's a little too tough for me. I like them tender. I like them raw. That's how Trump eats them. It's like, what are you talking about? this is the problem, Donald Trump. And this is why I think that eventually Ted Cruz will end up doing better. Although, as I said last week, I think the establishment ought to get on the Ted Cruz bandwagon if they want to stop Trump. Okay, things that I hate. As always, when it comes to stuff I hate, I'm going to mention something that I like up front. People very often ask me about music that I like. So I'll mention to you a classical piece that you probably haven't heard. And it's called Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis, by a composer named Ralph Vaughan Williams. He's a British composer from the early 20th century, and it's a terrific piece. It's like, when you listen to it, it's like sitting in an English cathedral. It's like sitting in Westminster Abbey. It's an amazing piece. So Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis. Listen to it tonight. It's very relaxing. It's a wonderful piece of music. And it's actually very spiritual. It's like you can almost feel the sun streaming through the windows of the Abbey as you're listening to it. It's really terrific. Okay, on to more important things, like things that I hate. Okay, so MSNBC, we've commented on Melissa Harris Perry before. She's the anchorette of MSNBC on the weekends, and she is the one who always hashtags Nerdland, which, as I mention every time, I find deeply ironic, because to be a nerd, you have to be smart. And Melissa Harris Perry clearly is not. And so she started talking about Star Wars. Now, I should mention, the original Star Wars movies, episodes 4, 5, and 6, big fan. Like any other sentient human being, episodes 1, 2, and 3 are an absolute abomination. They never happened. They've been wiped from my memory. Every bit of them should be taken out and burned. They're awful in every way it's conceivable. I mean, how you take Liam Neeson and turn a movie with Liam Neeson into just a garbage fest is beyond me, because I think Liam Neeson's a really good actor. It's just, those episodes are awful. But 4, 5, and 6 are terrific. And 4, 5, and 6 are terrific, mainly because the villain is awesome, right? Darth Vader is a great villain. He's a terrific villain. Well, if you're on MSNBC, Darth Vader is... I'll just let Melissa Harris-Perry explain this, because this is so beyond stupid. It just shows you that when it comes to the culture, the left will leave nothing alone. There is no stone that they will leave unturned. There is no point at which they will not claim that culture is biased against them. There is no point at which they will just let us enjoy a movie, for God's sake, without the infusion of leftist political crap. And here you go. You're about to hear why Star Wars is racist.
The part where he was totally a black guy whose name basically was James Earl Jones, who,
right.
And we were all, and
yes.
But while he was black, he was terrible and bad and awful and used to cut off white men's hands and didn't, you know, actually claim his son. But as soon as he claims his son and goes over to the good, he takes off his mask and he is white. Oh yes, I have many, many feelings about that, but I will try to put them over here.
Okay, what? In case she wasn't aware, Darth Vader, right, Anakin Skywalker, is the father of Luke. Luke is the whitest person who has ever walked the planet. The only other person who is whiter than Luke is Leia, who's his twin sister. Right? So, what did she expect? There was going to be a black guy underneath? That would have been weird. Right? I don't know how genetics works in this galaxy far, far away, but in the galaxy where we live, typically white kids are produced by white parents, and black kids are produced by black parents. Or at the very least, black kids are produced by at least one black parent, and white kids are generally produced by two white parents, because if you have one white parent, one black parent, typically the kid tends to look mixed. I mean, this is just the way that genetics works. What did she expect was going to happen? Take off the mask and all of a sudden it was going to be Shaq? Like, what? That would be a weird moment, wouldn't it? And by the way, no one, now we all care that James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader, but back in the day when they made these movies, no one cared that James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader. If you just listen to the voice of Darth Vader, you don't go, oh, that's a brother. Like, nobody does that. It's just Darth Vader's voice. What are you talking about? But everything has to be infused with race. By the way, if Star Wars is racist, why is the coolest figure in all of Star Wars Lando Calrissian? Who's a true badass? I mean, Lando's awesome. Everybody loves Lando. Like, Lando is unrepentant Han Solo. Who doesn't end up with the girl. I mean, Lando's pretty cool. But believe it or not, Harris Perry doesn't stop there. She then says that not only is Darth Vader a black guy when he's evil, also Chewbacca, for some reason, is a black guy, which, what?
I mean, what? I hated Ken, because he seemed kind of whack, so I used to always marry them off to Chewbacca. And so given that you are saying...
Wait a minute.
Yes, I married all my black Barbies off to Chewbacca. That was because he was tall and, you know, like...
Hairy,
kind of in control of the situation. Yeah. And now that you're saying
sublingual,
that this is...
That's...
Yeah, wondering about... I have concerns about my own childhood now.
What? Words fail. So things I hate. MSNBC infusing entertainment with values that actually are not there. Like, there's enough leftism in movies. You really don't have to search far to make up excuses for talking about leftism in movies. For God's sake, the one that's going to win all the Oscars this year is a movie about a guy who thinks he's a girl, but we're all going to pretend that he's really a girl, right? This Eddie Redmayne, the Danish Girl flick, which is going to win all sorts of awards. And if it's not that movie, then it'll be the lesbian flick with Cate Blanchett, right? So, I mean, you don't have to go far in the entertainment field to find leftist content that you can absolutely adore. But Melissa Harris Perry making, basically, this is actually an intellectual step up for her from normally what she talks about. This is a lady who's actually worn tampon earrings on air. She actually, to protest abortion politics or some such nonsense. Okay, we will conclude with this. The Saturday Night Live, I've always heard my entire life that there was a point when Saturday Night Live was good. And no matter which generation you speak to, it was always the generation before theirs, right? So when you talk to somebody who grew up in the 80s, they'll say, yeah, it wasn't that great then, but in the 70s, it was awesome. When you talk to someone who grew up in the 90s, it wasn't that great in the 90s, but in the 80s, it was awesome. And now it's like, no, it was never good. It was never good. And so on Saturday Night Live, they had Will Ferrell on to be George W. Bush, which, by the way, is the most overrated impression of all time. This is such an overrated impersonation. Will Ferrell does not do a good George W. Bush. He looks significantly more like Jeb than George. I mean, if you slap a pair of glasses on him, he looks exactly like Jeb, but he looks nothing like George. And so here he was on Saturday Night Live. They are so desperate to avoid hitting President Obama. For God's sake, President Obama is the president of the United States in the middle of a terror attack, and he's talking about how he's going to fight the global temperature. But there's nothing to mock. They can't find a single thing to mock. They have to go to the well and bring back George W. Bush, played by Will Ferrell, who, by the way, whatever charm Will Ferrell once had, talk about a one-note guy. I mean, at a certain point, that note gets real tiresome, and you're about to see it happen live on television. Here we go.
Let's take a look at some of the front runners. Dr. Ben Carson. I can barely hear him when he talks. I tell you something, that's not going to work when you have to go to China or Azerbaijan, where you have to talk loudly so they will understand. Not to mention, he's some kind of brain surgeon. And I got news for him. Running the country is not brain surgery.
Okay, so whatever. This is what they do. And this goes all the way back. I mean, I think we have this clip of Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford all the way back when. I mean, this is how SNL has been going after Republicans for literally decades at this point. They can never bring themselves to go after a Democrat in any real way. Here is Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford. If you go back 40 years, they're doing this routine. 40 years.
My fellow Americans, ladies and gentlemen, members of the press, and my immediate family. First, may I thank you all for being here, and I am in my immediate family. First, may I thank you all for being here, and I am in my immediate family. Thank you all for being here, and I am truly honored to be asked by you to open the Saturday night show with Harvey Cosell. I do have two major announcements to make.
Okay, so I think this is proof positive the show is never good, ever. And all the lies about it once upon a time have been being good, lies. It was never good. I mean, if that's what they were doing 40 years ago. By the way, that impression of Gerald Ford probably lost Gerald Ford the 1976 election. The dundering, blundering idiot. He was constantly bumping into things. Gerald Ford was the most athletic president we have ever had. He was actually an All-American linebacker for Michigan, for University of Michigan. But they played him like an idiot. And so, things I hate, Saturday Night Live, Melissa Harris Perry, and the generalized attempt to read leftism into entertainment where it doesn't exist and critique right-wing thought where it doesn't exist, and then also to use the mechanisms of culture in order to rip on the right wing, which is all that Saturday Night Live has become. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. We will see you tomorrow, and make sure that you subscribe to see our beautiful new video feed and our new set. I mean, if you haven't checked it out yet, you're missing out. Plus, look at this punim. God, I'm just so cute. Ben Shapiro Show, and see you tomorrow.
Burgers are one of the most popular foods in America. You've probably eaten one recently, and you're definitely craving one now that we're talking about it. Make this summer one to remember with Good Ranchers. Right now, listeners will get free Wagyu burgers for a year. If you haven't had their American Wagyu burgers, I was just telling people here in the office, you're definitely missing out. My mouth is watering just thinking about it. Simply go to GoodRanchers.com and subscribe to any of their custom curated boxes filled with 100% American beef, chicken, pork, or wild caught seafood. Use code DAILYWIRE at checkout to claim your free American Wagyu burgers for a year. Not only is this a $400 value, but you'll also get a free bacon butter gift that's the perfect bacon topping for any burger. And in case you needed any other reason to support Good Ranchers, they support Paralyzed Veterans of America. Every order you make saves American farms and directly supports American veterans. Change the way you buy your meat today. Go to goodranchers.com and use code DAILYWIRE to claim your free burgers for a year and support veterans this Memorial Day season. That's goodranchers.com. Use code DAILYWIRE. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.